next three or four sessions, including tonight. The situation seems to be getting worse rather than better.
Yeah, Bodhisattva was the house of George.
With the Bodhisattva.
That sounds funny.
Yeah. In other words, things are sort of becoming more and more polarized, and I just don't know which way, how events will end up. But one now finds ideological debates, the likes of which I would never have imagined, say, as recently as a half year ago. And by then I was pretty immune to major shocks, I thought. Let's take everything a little bit slowly and try to concentrate to some extent on the positive. All right. I'm going to begin by quoting some material that's not part of a handout. It's so much not part of a handout, but where did I put it? There's something just to get it. I want to put it somewhere. The situation seems to have gotten worse rather than better. Therefore, we're going to just have to spend some time going over some pretty obvious topics, and I will try to intersperse the unpleasant with the pleasant, to at least not have everything so gloomy. Let me begin with some side issues. The Gemara in Shabbat says, Hai shagag b'lo mitkaven d'avodah zarah hechidam. How is it possible for someone to make an error unintentionally as far as the isur of avodah
zarah?
This is on Daf Ayin Beis Amud Beis. Okay. Memory serves correctly. No, that's where it is. It's just with the computer you can print out the selection that you need and not necessarily have the page. But it's on Daf Ayin Beis Amud Beis. The same Gemara is to be found in Sanhedrin and other places. But the question that the Gemara asks is, how is it possible to have an unintentional error when it comes to Avodah Zarah? Because after all, one of the key ingredients in the very definition of the prohibition of Avodah Zarah is intent. So the Gemara says, Ileima kasavor beit haknesetu v'hishtachavela. If someone thought that a particular building was a shul, you're driving past the building, you think it's a nice big shul, you bow down on the assumption that it's a shul, and it turns out that really it's a church. Okay. Hechidam. Ileima kasavor beit haknesetu v'hishtachavela hareli bo lashamayim. There was no act of Avodah Zarah whatsoever, because when he bowed down, he didn't intend to bow down to Avodah Zarah, he meant to worship God. Therefore, there wasn't even an act of Avodah Zarah. Ella, v'tachazi andarta, he saw a beautiful statue, v'sagidla, and bowed down to the statue. Hekidam, how does that work? If he bowed down to a statue of Venus because he was actually thinking of Venus as a goddess, then that's mazik. If he did not intend to accept Venus as a goddess, but just was expressing his admiration for the beauty of the statue. Again, there was no act of Avodah Zarah. If you go and see Michelangelo's statue of David and express appreciation for the beauty of the statue, that doesn't make that into an act of Avodah Zarah. Ella, that may ahava umiyira, that he performed this act out of love or fear. And that's going to be very problematical for us, so let's leave the definition aside. What does that mean, out of love or fear? The simplest explanation, and the one that Rashi gives, is out of love or fear, he bowed down to the statue because he fell in love with some non-Jewish woman who persuaded him that this would be a good thing to do, or fear was that he was afraid that someone would shoot him if he didn't bow down. In other words, the act itself did not include any commitment on his part, but was an act which he did out of love of a person or a fear of a person. Strangely, the Rambam has a different interpretation of what me'ahava u'me'yira means, and we'll come to that in a moment.
The phrase appears in other contexts as well.
Right, for example. This would be an instance where, according to Abaye, where such an act in and of itself is liable, etc., etc. So that's the Gemara in Shabbos, and with some variation the Gemara in Sanhedrin. What's this business, the Kasava? Kasavo Beit HaKnesset Hu V'Hishtachavela. What does that mean?
Why would you bow anyway to a Beit Knesset?
Simply, he went to pray and he bowed down stairs in a building, thinking it wasn't this.
Or toward in the direction of a building. Let's say he was not in the building. He saw a building. Had he been inside the building and he would have seen the statues there, he would have not bowed down. He saw the building, he thought it was a shul, he was going to Daven Mincha or whatever it was, and he faced in the direction of the shul, right? I mean, seems to me the simple interpretation of what the Ishtahadella means.
But someone passing by might think he was bowing down to the church.
Someone passing by who knew that there was a church in there would have thought that, and in fact there were idols in there, he thought it was a shul, then he would have been in fact bowing down to the idols that were in the temple, the pagan temple, let's say, or to the cross that was in the church, but he thought that it was a shul, and he had to daven in some direction, and he was davening in that direction. I want to emphasize this because it seems to me that this is the simple, plain, old-fashioned meaning of this phrase, v'hishtachavela. He didn't bow down to the synagogue, he bowed down in the direction of the synagogue, because he was bowing, he felt that that was bowing down to God. Does anyone have another interpretation?
No, he's walking down the street, it's Mincha time, ducks into an alley, he davens Mincha, and he realizes after he davened that, lo and behold, the alley he ducked into, there was a
right.
Church.
But the fact that he was bowing down in a particular direction was because there was a building there, right? For example, it's always problematical to bow down to God in a specific direction. Right? Why do we
think
that direction? It says ve'hishtach beit haKnesset hi ve'hishtachavel la,
which is a little problem.
Mildly problematic, but the interpretation seems to me to be straightforward. Not that he was bowing to a building. I'm emphasizing this point because in some weird polemical discussion I've been having in the last week or two, someone wants to give it an entirely different interpretation to this building. I mean, I want to point out, for example, that we all, in almost all shuls in this country, except the one that I daven in, the shul faces the east, more or less, namely is oriented towards Yerushalayim.
On the Great Circle?
It should be, presumably, on the Great Circle.
Should it point to Jerusalem?
It should. I'm not going to get into these fine, fussy points. Presumably, if I had my druthers, the most intelligent thing would be point in the geodesic direction towards Jerusalem, whatever that is. But, as I say, the shul that I have been davening in for the last 60 years or thereabouts, and the one I davened in last Shabbos, for example, everybody faces west.
Also get Jerusalem,
but that's not the point. Don't buy a Paul or something.
No, it just happened to be that when they bought this building from a church 100 years ago, it was constructed in such a way that the only place that they could put the Aron HaKodesh is on the western wall rather than on the eastern wall. And everybody in that shul for the last 60 years, and I assume for the last 100 years or whatever, all that shul is, has been facing west, and in the base medrash you face sort of south. In neither place does anyone face
the
east.
A lot of shuls in New York are trying to create
south. Right. There have been a lot of great people coming through that shul, and every Shabbos morning, one of the people who davens in the same minyan as me is Reuven Feinstein and a couple of other rabbanim with whom I'm on all friendly terms. Nobody has proposed to reconstruct the building, but the fact of the matter is, therefore, we all face in a certain direction, and we face in that direction because that's the way the building is constructed.
No reconstruction is in
that. Right, no reconstruction is in that.
Literally, no reconstruction.
Okay. I'm emphasizing this because even though, as Jonathan says, the language is mildly problematic, the simple-minded meaning of the passage is that he's facing in a certain direction. He has to bow down. He wants to daven. Are you allowed to bow down to God in any direction, after all? Presumably God doesn't have any specific direction, but we are accustomed to all bowing in a specific direction, and therefore this is libol hashamayim. Right? I'm mentioning this because there's a really crazy interpretation given to this by someone whom we'll get to if we get to it a little bit later. To emphasize this, I want to remind you of a very, very famous and beautiful tshuva of the Rambam's, which I'm sure at some time or other you've all read, but this is still one that is very most beautiful tshuva. This is a tshuva of the Rambam, tshuva she'asa harav li'Yishmael achar she'nitgayer. So this is a letter written by the Rambam to an Arab after he converted to Judaism. Hegiu eleinu she'elot Moranav Rabbana Ovadia Hamaskil Hanevin Der Tzedek Yishalem Ad Hashem Pa'alo Udhi Maskarotosh Shlema Ve'am Hashem Elokei Yisrael Ashabu Lachasod Tachat Kanafav Sha'aya Yishmael Benitgayer. He was a Muslim and he converted to Judaism.
Dangerous
thing to do, and the Rambam is expressing his admiration.
This is Avadya Hager himself.
This is written to Avadya Hager.
But he himself was a Yishmael. Was he a Yishmael?
The addressee of this Shuvah of the Rambam is Mr. Avadya.
Okay.
He is the person to whom the Rambam is writing this letter. She'ela. Al Elo HaYishmaelim. Then you have to skip four lines. She'amarta she'enam ovdei avodah zarah. You maintain that the Muslims are not idolaters. Ve'amar l'cha rabcha she'hem ovdei avodah zarah. And your teacher told you that they are to be construed as idolaters. Ba'avanim she'mashlichim betavrutam hein l'malkos. And the fact that they happen to throw stones as part of their worship is a worship of Mercury. They shivlocha shaloka hogan, and he answered you in an improper fashion. Ad shenitzatavta elitcha v'nichlamka. And so to the extent that you became sad and ashamed and embarrassed. V'karalacha alecha v'kara alecha anek sil ki'avlato. You should answer a fool according to his foolishness. And Tshuva. This is now the Rambam's response. Elo ha-Yishma'elim einam ovdei avodah zarah klal. The Muslims are not idolaters at all. Ukvar nechvata mipihem umilibam. All idolatry, all has been removed from their mouths and from their hearts. Behem miyachadim la'el yit'ale yichud kavaoi. They attribute monotheism to God, as should be the case, yichud she'ein bo dofi, with a unity that has no problematic aspects. V'lo meshum she'ein b'nei she'ein meshakrim aleinu mechazvim ve'omim she'anu omim she'yesh le'el yit'elat ben mechazev v'kach achrei anachnu aleihem v'nomad she'ein bo de'er v'odazara. They're not like the Christians.
I think he's saying just because the Muslims say that we also have a son of God, we should be saying about them.
Right. Yeah, that's probably what he said. התורה העידה עליהם אשר פיהם דבשב ימיהם שביהיה העידה עלינו שארית ישראל לא יעשו הרעלה ולא ידברו כזב ולא ימצאה בפיהם לשם תנדה. ואם יאמר לך אדם שהבית שהם מקלצינו אותו בית עבודה זרה היא, and if you think that the house in Mecca, what's it called, the Kaaba, is a house of idolatry, בעבודה זרה צפונה בתוכו, and there are idols hidden inside it, שהיו עובדים אותה אבותיהם, which were worshipped in the past by their forefathers, מה בכך? So what if historically this particular house had in the past housed idolatry? אלו המשתחווים כנגדו היום אין ליבם אלא לשמיים. Those who face Mecca and pray in the direction of this house today are only worshipping God. כבר פירשו רז"ל שאם השתחווה אדם לבית עבודה זרה, if someone bows down to a house of idolatry, והוא סבור שהוא בית הכנסת, הרי ליבו מסור לשמיים. Since his heart is given over to God, then this is not construed as an act of idolatry. וכן אלו הישמעאלים היום כולם טף ונשים נכרתה עבודה זרה מפיהם. Their all idolatry has been removed from their lips, but ta'utam v'tipshutam v'tvarim acherim hi, they do have nonsense on other matters, she'i yashar la'omro v'chtav m'pnei poshei v'roshei Yisrael, which I certainly cannot write because of the slanderers who will turn my writings over to the Muslim authorities. Aval b'yichud Hashem yitaleh, on the question of the unity of God, ein lahem ta'ut klal. There's no error whatsoever. Uviyamet shahaya la Yishma'elin mikodem biyotam ha'makomot shlosha minei avodah zarah. It's true that in the past, these Muslims had three types of avodah zarah, pa'ol, umalkolis, u'kmosh. V'heim atzmam odim bedvarim elu hayom, v'koim lahem shemot v'lashon aradi. פאור עבדותו שיפאור עצמו לפניו, או שיניח ראשו ויגביע ערוותו למולו, כמו שאלו הישמעאלים משתחווים היום בתפילתם, ומרקוליס עבודתו ברגימת אבנים, וכמו שעבודתו בקריאת הראש, ושלא ילבוש בגד תפור. דברים אלו כולם מפורשים וידועים אצלנו מקודם, שתיאמי דת הישמעאלים. All of these practices existed before the advent of Moham. אבל הישמעאלים היום אומרים זה שנברא ראשנו ושלא נבש בגד תפור בתפירות הוא כדי להיכנע לפני האל יתעלה ולזכור איך יעמוד האדם מקברו, what a man arising from the grave would look like, וזה שנשליך אבנים לפני השטן אנו משליכים אותם כדי לערבו, ואחרים מפקחים מפקחיהם. Where their wise men notim tam v'omim tzlamim hayu sham v'anu rodmim b'makom atzlamim, with throwing stones at the statues, klomar she'ein anu ma'amidim b'tzlamim shayu sham. V'derech bizayon lahem anu rodmim otam. V'cherim anu nitalku kvap minadu. I'll just say that it's just an ancient custom. V'alo shel davar, af al pi she'ikah ha'dvarim yisodam l'avodah zarah, even though these practices may have originated in the past as acts of idolatry, אין אדם בעולם משליך אותם אבנים ולא משתחווה לאותו מקום ולא עושה דבר מכל הדברים לשם עבודה זרה, לא בפיו ולא בליבו, אלא ליבה מסור לשמיים. So again, he interprets this משתחווה לבית, בית הכנסת, to mean that he's praying to God, and that's just the normal direction in which this prayer is taking place. And the fact that your teacher answered you improperly, this is a great sin on his part, כי שיקור היה זה ולא ידע שב-36 מקומות הסירה התורה על הגר Va'ed, the Ge'elot Tona, etc., Behi Onat, Barim, Il Hamahu Hamet, Ba'ita Ata, Toeha Yolo, Hasbila Chapanim, Ludabel Harakot, Kol Shekain Shata, Amahata Hamet, Behu Hatoe, etc., etc. And he just criticizes the teacher for having engaged in improper language. That's enough of that Shura. That's a beautiful passage from the image of Adar. Now there are a few other items that I want to cover before we go on to the body of the different texts of the Shuvot. So here's some material that I haven't passed out, but it's pretty standard material. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Ha'oved avodah zara me'ahava u'me'ira. Abaye amar chayav, Rava amar patur. Abaye amar chayav, the ha'polcha. That even if you worship the avodah zara because out of love or fear, so what? Nevertheless, you actually committed this act of avodah zara. Rava amar patur, I kiblei alei ba'eloha in ilo lo. If you accepted this avodah zara as divine, then you're liable for worshiping it. But simply bowing down or performing any other particular act without actually accepting the avodah zara as divine, this has no significance. The Tanan ha'oved avodah zara echad ha'oved v'chuli ma'ala v'echad ha'oved mi'ahava mi'yira v'yavrav ha'machal lo v'metan le'tzor yukin. Amar Abayi Minah Aminah Tanya lo tishtachabe lahem. You may not bow down to them. Lahem yirata mishtachabe. You're not allowed to bow down to the idols. Aval ata mishtachabe la'adam kamodcha. One is allowed to bow down to another person if that's the normal, like in Japan today, for instance, or in the old days before the kings, if that's the normal means of obeisance. Yachol afilu ne'evad kahaman. Are you allowed to bow down to a person who in fact is worshipped as a divine being, the way Haman was worshipped? Talmud lomar v'lo talbeh. V'ha Haman mi'yirahu ne'evad. After all, people who bow down to Haman did so because of the governmental edict, and therefore, nevertheless, that was liable. But Rabbi Amar Kahaman v'lo kahaman. Kahaman de'yu gufei avodah zara. V'lo kahaman de'yu Haman mi'yira v'hachalav mi'yira. In the case of Haman, there may have been exculpatory circumstances which would make you not liable, but otherwise you would be liable. Okay? So, let me again remind you what we saw in the Ran, in his explanation of this passage about what is Kahaman v'shalo Kahaman. He has a different view of the Muslims than the Rambam has. Yachol afilu ne'evad kahaman. You might think that bowing down to a person who is worshipped as divine, like Haman was, is permissible. Peirush. You're allowed to bow down to another man if it's clearly understood that this is just a relationship between men. If this bowing down is an act of religious worship, even if you don't explicitly consider this person divine, as long as it's an act of religious worship, asurai. Uladat abaye chayavin aleha mita, shehishtachadah v'ashel haman hishtachadah shel alut utaita. The bowing down to Haman was an act of religious worship, and therefore was prohibited as idolatry. And for that reason, Mordechai was willing to risk death rather than to bow down to Haman. Even though we decide like Rava that a person who worships out of fear or out of love is not liable, the ein chayav in olav mita, v'chatat, mikol makom, me'inyan avodah zarahi, Nevertheless, that act is a considered as an act of idolatry, even if you're not liable for it. Even though you are not guilty of a capital offense, you're not allowed to engage in such an act. As far as idolatry is concerned, or all related acts, a person is supposed to be willing to sacrifice his life rather than commit an act of idolatry, even if that act of idolatry, had he committed it, doesn't carry with it a capital offense. Any kind of such act of idolatry is yehareg v'al yavo. V'lamadnu mikan, and we derive from here, shehakdoshim shel kutim, that the saints of the Christians, v'gan hamashugah shel hayishma'elim, and also Mohammed, afal pi, she'ein to'in achrehem la'asotam elohut, even though the Christians don't believe that the saints are divine, nor do the Muslims believe that Mohammed was divine, ho'il u'mishtachadim lefneihem ishtachava'a shel elohut, since the bowing to them is vowed as a religious act, din avodah zarah yesh lehem l'chol davar. L'chol davar as isur shel avodah. They're not bowing down to them merely as an act of politeness or respect. The notion of being respectful to a dead person doesn't make any sense. So the Ran is very, very clear on this matter, that one has to distinguish between bowing as a courtesy, or like curtsying before the king or queen, or bowing down to someone as a motion of politeness, or any form of bowing that has with it a religious connotation. The moment that it has a religious connotation, it becomes an act of avodah zarah, and it's yehareg v'al yavo. Clear. Do you have something to add?
Yeah, otherwise, yehareg v'al yavo always implies you're doing it out of yira, right? Otherwise, there would be no issue.
Right.
The implication is that who declares the Elohut? Is it like Mohammed himself?
No, that's a very important question. But what the Ran is saying, we should discuss that.
That's what Haman
we should
said,
understand
yeah.
that. Well, and let me answer your question in two ways. One is that what he is saying is that bowing down to a saint is a religious act. They're not doing, you don't bow down to St. Francis, or whoever, St. Xavier, whoever your favorite saint is, because you're crediting to him the way that you would to the Trinity. The nature of the act is completely different. One is an act as part of your religion, and the other is an act of politeness. As long as it's only respect or politeness, it's permissible. The moment that it is a religious act that's part of your religion, then that makes it into an act of avodah zarah, even if you don't believe that this particular saint is in fact divine. You may or may not believe that the saint is divine. Let's assume that you don't. He's saying that it may be quite true, as the Rambam says, that the Muslims don't believe that Muhammad is divine. But if they bow down to Muhammad, even though they're strict monotheists, if they bow down to Muhammad as part of their religious service, that in and of itself makes it an act of avodah zarah. Now, a separate question that Mr. Weinstein asked is, how does an object become an object of avodah zarah? Well, it becomes an object of avodah zarah if it's worshipped by someone or by some group. Now, it is true that there's a principle of Ein Adam Oser Davar She'eino Shelo. If I bow down to your automobile, it doesn't make it into an object of avodah zarah, because for the very simple reason that I could inflict a huge amount of harm on all of my enemies by simply praying to their wealth, right? I can bankrupt you very easily if this would apply.
I have to take your car to the Dead Sea.
Right.
To a mountain, too. We had
right. And bowing down to a mountain doesn't make it into an object of Yisur. But as or bowing down to a person or to a live, right? But as Tosfos in Chulin says, so it's Bam Tes and them, I don't remember exactly, the fact that bowing down to a person doesn't render him asur b'hana'a, nevertheless does, if he is actually worshipped, then as far as many of the auxiliary laws is concerned, he's an object of Avodah Zarah. So if, for example, people actually pray to Rabbi Schneerson, and there's a significant group of people who regard him as being divine, then a picture of Rabbi Schneerson now becomes a picture of Avodah Zarah, not simply a picture of a famous rabbi. I mean, this is just common sense. It doesn't require much in the way of proof. But at any rate, there is a proof from the Tosfos.
So to be more specific, a picture or the standard picture that tends to be used by these people?
Like if a newspaper publishes.
Well, if a newspaper publishes a picture, presumably not. But a picture which is then used in a public place, like that great big sign.
That's what I mean. That's the standard picture.
Right.
That picture. Oh, there are other pictures.
If they're prayed to, or if they're put up in the wall of a synagogue, it becomes quite questionable.
Suppose it's sitting on
somebody's
dining room wall because it's sitting there for 20 years.
Right. Well,
I mean, would it depend on the subjectivity of the person?
It may depend upon the subjectivity of the person involved. Although I would say that in all of these cases, this thing becomes problematic. All right. Now let me go on with. A few more items before we come to the next series of Tshuvot. The Rambam has a strange, Jonathan does not find it strange, I will give him the floor on this subject, but the Rambam has the following. On this notion of what constitutes Ahava and what constitutes Yira. Ha'oved avodat kochavim mi'ahava. A person worships an idol out of love. What does that mean? Kegon, shachashak b'tzura zu mepnei melachta shehayta na'a biyoter. He found this particular statue extremely beautiful. Remember, the Rambam had a real antagonism towards aesthetics altogether. O she'avda miyiratola, or he prayed to it because he was terrified. Shema tavialo, that perhaps this idol will cause him harm. Kmo shehem edamim of deha shehem etiva umeriya, like the worshippers believe that this idol can do good or cause harm. Im kibla alav be'eloha chayav skila, if along with this he accepted the divinity of this idol, then he is liable for capital punishment. ואם עבדה דרך עבודתה או ביחד מארבע עבודות מאהבה או מיירה, פתור. Okay? That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam disagrees and gives the standard of interpretation that מאהבה means מאהבת אדם ומיירה מיירת אדם. What's difficult about this Rambam is why doesn't the fear of retribution from the idol itself constitute already an acceptance of the idol's divinity. I mean, it's conceivable with a stretch that one can imagine that just as a beautiful idol can inspire aesthetic admiration, a particularly horrendous idol can inspire some kind of a fear.
Yeah, Buddha seems that the sort of inspired looks to me like it could be beauty.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you listen to Verdi's Requiem, for example, you can certainly be terrified by the second section, the Dies Irae, for example, especially if you hear a very good performance. I don't know. But what I want to say is that on this matter, many of the followers, the normal traditional followers of the Rambam, simply reject him on this point. The Rivash in Simon Kuf Yud says, "Umikol makom kvar hiskimu hachronim zal she'ein perush haRambam zal me'ahava u'miyira nachon." Most later authorities simply do not accept the Rambam's interpretation. שאם אובדן מפני שחושב שיש בידיה כוח להרע או להיטיב, because if you worship this idol because you believe that it has the power to do good or cause harm, אף על פי שאין מקבלה בעולם חייו, ובהל לא הווה פטור רבה, דרוב כל עבדי עבודה זרה שבעולם כך הם. Most idolaters in this world aren't philosophers. They believe, they don't contemplate abstract principles of whether this really is divine or is not divine. Namely, they just are afraid that this particular God that they believe has the power to do them good or cause them harm. שגם הם חושבים שיש אלוה למעל מהם, and many of these idolaters do believe in the existence of a supreme God, אלא שחושבים שיש לא כוח להיטיב אלוה עליהם. But they believe that this particular idol or divinity has the power to do them good or cause them harm. או שרצון הבורא, or that it's the will of the creator that this particular idol or this particular sub-god or have the ability to do good or cause harm. ומתוך כך עובדים אותה. ועל זה ודאי הוא שהסירת תורה שלא לעבוד אותה. אלא כי פליגי הכה הוא כשהוא מודה שאין בה ממש, and he agrees that the idol has no power whatsoever, אלא שמאהבת אדם או מיראתו הוא עובדה, ולא מיראתו שיהרגם. It's not because he's afraid that they would kill him, but that they would cause him some other form of monetary or physical harm. Nevertheless, he's doing this out of fear of a man or out of love of a man.
Why does he put the exclusion of the Tachat Shiyargeo? Because is it not Yareg Valyama?
That would be all right. That would be all right, in other words, if it was just out of fear.
In other words, if it was out of fear, then it's out of fear of a man, then there's no liability. And all, okay. Let's see what the Mahiri says on this, because he's more or less also quite explicit on this point, even though the Mahiri normally follows the Rambam.
Which one are we going to choose?
Ha'oveid avodah zarah mi'ahava o mi'yirah, ela she'eino mekablah be'eloh ha'klal, afilu la'adam ha'ne'evad, k'mo ha'man she'asah et atzmo avodah zarah, v'afilu ein libo la'shamayim, patur mi'mitah ela she'yesh bo isur. V'davar zeh, this matter, גדולי המחברים הרשוהה מאהבה מתוך חשק הצורה לרוב נויה ויופיה, ומוראה שמטרה לו. ובירא מיהו אין דבריהם נראה. This notion that worshipping a god, a foreign god, out of fear, means fear of the damned harm that this god might be able to do to you, doesn't seem reasonable. שכל שעובד מיירת עונש הרעה, ועובד לו לשנות לו לתפקידו, אפילו עבד כוכב על דרך זה, קבלת אלוהי. If you worship a star because you think that the star has the power over your future, and you're praying to it to change it, that in and of itself is accepting the divinity of the star. שאם הכוכב יורה עליו לרעה, מפלל לו, אין לך קבלת אלוהי יותר מזה. ואפילו יודע בסיבה אחרת למעלה ממנו. Even if you would agree for the existence of a prime mover or some ultimate cause above and beyond the star, the very fact that you're praying to a star in order to change your fate is in of itself acceptance of Avodah Zarah. So again, I'm pointing out that on this matter, both the Meiri and the Ravash, who normally would follow the Rambam very closely if there was any disagreement with other authorities, simply reject the Rambam's position out of hand. Now, you wanted to say something?
Well, the Rambam, first of all, doesn't say you're allowed to do this. He's saying that you're pater from this case.
Right.
Which is a long way from endorsing. And I guess his basic position is that if religious belief without a philosophical acceptance is just some kind of habit or emotional reaction that isn't valued as an act at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's too philosophical.
That was on the zodiac, and we have the old shoe.
Very problematical.
Black in the
Bialystok shoe. Okay.
Scorpio looks like a monster.
Right. That is another very interesting and long trip of the Mavik that I didn't reproduce for you. I'm just going to read again the beginning and the end of it because I want to get to some of the material that I have reproduced. And then I want to get to some other material. It's just that, you know, the fact that I have to touch some of this other material is in and of itself.
Should we put on gloves?
Yeah, I think so. It's contaminated.
You got some in your trunk.
Just like when they put it in the airplane.
Right. Yandeinu Rabbeinu al Tzura mi-Pesel shenit kalkala b'vet Yehudi Echad. There was a statue which got damaged in a Jew's house. We have some statue which is now a threat to the passers-by. A piece of the arm will fall off and kill somebody who's walking underneath. Is the Jew allowed to repair or not? It's an interesting question, but not one that I want to go into. His conclusion is, I just want to read his conclusion because of the effect on the photograph. In the kol halein ta'amer b'la'el, ne'ral ani adate da'metaken shapir adal. That's someone who's simply repairing an existing statue in order to prevent damage to passers-by is doing something that's good. Ve'ein sarich kapara kasher dam tematen. He doesn't require any expiation as you've judged it. Amnam shemat mashatallah rav ahu tam heter gam b'meshe eino elat sivrat samalanim ve'enu chakuk v'shishar einirav. Really lucky. The fact that this had to do with something which was not a full-fledged statue, but actually merely a painting, is irrelevant. The mashechalku bein sura boletet le'ein boletet. The difference between a three-dimensional statue and one which is not three-dimensional, haynu dafka ba'asuya l'noi, v'lo l'shem avodah zarah. That's only if this object was created as an aesthetic object, and therefore one is not allowed, even for aesthetic reasons, to create a three-dimensional sculptural image of a human being, for example. But you are allowed to paint a painting of a human being or take a photograph. Aval hecha shehi vadai ne'evedet, if the object involved is definitely worshipped, ibi ve'ibi asura, v'chal ala isur avodah zarah, l'chi anir al ne'evedi, l'chi lukzeh, v'chal anir da'ati. Okay, period. In other words, the difference between two-dimensional and three-dimensional images, says the Maharik, only applies to non-ritual objects. But ritual objects or pictures of actual avodah zarah, a picture of Jesus, for example, whether it's two or three dimensional makes absolutely no difference.
Icons.
Right.
A hologram.
Or a hologram, for instance.
The Maharik's question is the statue that gets repaired, is that a worship statue?
Yes,
or?
It was a painting, actually, that was worshipped. All right, now, again, let's move on to, where was the handout from tonight? I want to move on to a question which is, I could go through 20 tshuvot. I'll go through two on the issue, the famous issue having to do with praying at the cemetery, or including in prayers various appeals to intermediaries, such as your parents, etc. So I'll go through two tshuvot, both of which are ambiguous. That is, they leave the matter unresolved. I could have started earlier with the Schach and with the Bach, or with the Sheb Shulis and Chaim Paltiel, and I certainly could have gone through two or three other things, but for the purpose of saving time, since most of these positions are summarized in these two tshuvot, let's go through. The first tshuva is from Maram Shik, so one of your favorite poskim, Hungarian hero. Nechtavo ha-na'im kibalti, v'sukot ha-abar, v'shamat v'kholi v'al v'al derach t'todah shavola ha'ir al ma'a shekata v'elu yu'ruah ba b'shem ha-maharil tzok shesimun tafkuf samachalaf t'ah v'holech l'beit ha-kvarot u'mishtateach al kivrei tzadikim lo yasim ha-gamato l'itpalel lahem. He should not direct his attention to pray to them. Ela mishum de sham makom kadosh v'tahol, because the cemetery is a holy place. The libo nichna, and since he's in the presence of all of these dead, he will be depressed. Utfilato mukubelet yoteh, and his prayers will therefore be more acceptable. ועפי מגדים כתב שם, בנוסחה מהתפילה, במענה לשון, משמע דמתפללים שימליצו טוב בעדיהם. That we ask the dead to plead on our behalf. ובספר חיי אדם...